Episode 77 of the Church Digital Podcast, powered by Stadia Church Planting. Jeff here. Okay, like, I want to need everybody listening to this podcast. Go ahead and do me a favor. Take off your Church Online hat. Don't look at this podcast. Don't expect to hear anything technological in context of this podcast. No social media, no Church Online, no chat, online small groups, nothing. We're stripping this podcast down to some of the bare basics of what we know of as church, whether it's online or even if it's physical, if it's a church plant, or even if it gets down to an established church that's been around for a long time. You see, I've been hanging around these Stadia people, and the one thing that I have really loved about being on staff with Stadia and getting to know them and their culture and their DNA is I'm starting to realize how little I actually knew about church, even though I'd been on staff with the church, like different churches, like 15 years of my life. And I'm discovering new ideas and new thoughts. And it's like, my gosh, we need to let others know about this. And there's one of these conversations, and this is, we're going to have a string of these things. They're all going to piece together because my proverbial brain has exploded several times starting on this thread. And the first part of this conversation that I want you audience out there to start to understand is the concept of the one. You see, I didn't understand this in my church experience, in my church online experience, working with multiple churches across the country, different denominations, I just at different sizes. I didn't really have a grasp on this until I started hanging around some Stadia people. And all of a sudden, like the idea started to grow and it started, became this much larger thing that I can't wait to share. Here's what I need you to understand. What is your one? Whether you're a physical church, whether you're a digital church, whether you're a church online, whether you're a church plant, whether you're established, what is it? Because you see, I think once you figure out your one, and once you understand the principle of the one for the individuals, all of a sudden you're realizing your church has far greater impact than what it did with the 1 hour on Sunday. And I'm giving stuff away, and really, you don't need to hear it from me. I want you to hear it from somebody who's lived this for 30 years of his life. And so, plus 30 plus years of his life. I'm bringing in Tim Selleck into the conversation. Tim, you may not know, he's director of new church growth at Stadia Church Planting. A great guy. One of these relationships that I've loved in the short amount of time I've been with Stadia, just listening to him and learning from him in this process. So Tim was a former lead pastor at the Crossing Church in New Mesa, and really brings a phenomenal story of a church that was hugely evangelical, was hugely outward facing, public facing in bringing the one in. And Tim's philosophy of how to understand the one and how to help others understand their ones is something that I want everyone who listens to this podcast to understand, because I truly believe this is going to change your church, and this is going to change your church online and the way that we approach ministry overall. It's that good. So into this conversation, I'm bringing in Tim Selleck, once again, director of new church growth with Stadia, former lead pastor at the Crossings for 30 plus years, church planter way back in the day. I'm also bringing in Emily Diaz, who's one of the Stadia project managers and a co-host here with the show on a number of different shows now, in a conversation that I'm simply calling Church, Church Online, and Finding Your One. Okay, everybody, here you go.
I planted a church in the fall of 1988, September of 1988, to be specific, in Orange County, California, you know, in the city of Costa Mesa. And that time, and even to today, Costa Mesa was not a growing community. It was about 110,000 when we planted. It's about 133,000 now. And so we planted, grew a church over 30 years. The church took so many different twists and turns because our community went from being primarily Caucasian, 93% Caucasian, 7% other, to realistically today, 50% Hispanic, about 45% Caucasian, 5% other. So there was a lot of shifts there. But what we started as a church day one, we started with this philosophy that we were going to be focused. The way we said it is on somebody who was saying no to God, and we wanted them to say yes to him through his son, Jesus Christ. So that was the focus. It was a drum I beat from day one, and I kept beating that drum all the way until I handed the baton of leadership off on its 30th anniversary in the fall or September of 2018. And I stepped up on the Stadia staff. They graciously allowed me to be a part of the organization to encourage people who were and are where I was as a planter. So I get the opportunity now as the director of New Church Growth to really just encourage, cheerlead, coach, consult, attaboy, attagirl, planters who are a couple months before launch to roughly 2 years after launch. So that's me.
One of the things that I love about Tim is when you start to have conversations with him, you can see that he bleeds this stuff and from the 30 plus years of his church and now working with Stadia, where he's helping other church planters now go out there and plant churches with this just different mindset of the one. And so Tim, just for the audience here, define the one. What does the one mean in context of church today to you?
That's a good question. It's a great question, but I'd like to do it through sort of a story if I could, if that's okay with you. That's what I'd like to do it. So, and the cool part is Emily was the one who encouraged me to share this story. So at least I know one person out in the digital world that says this was a good deal. So here we go. I actually, when I moved out here to Costa Mesa, I didn't realize I was like right next to the ocean. I mean, duh. Well, there was a period in my ministry where I needed something as a hobby because I didn't have any. So a guy said, why don't you take up sailing? And I did. And I really love it. And then I got into sailboat racing and I love it. And one time we were actually in a sailboat race, very, very windy race, participating off the coast of Santa Barbara, California. There's these islands called the Channel Islands. And we were going between two of them, Santa Cruz Island and Anacapa Island. And what happened was, as we were sailing between it, the wind picked up so much. And what you try to do on those islands, you try to get close to them because you could actually speed up, you know, and you go faster. Well, what happened was on that day, some boats, at least one boat, got way too close. And what they didn't realize is there's rock outcroppings that you can't see. And I'm at the helm of the boat I was on. And I hear this distress signal. It's like 911 over the water, okay? And one of the sailboats was literally in trouble. It got too close to the island. And some boats began to respond. They broke their course, responded to the distress signal. But they soon realized they didn't have what they needed on their boat, and their boat wasn't really adept at trying to get to those people. So they abandoned going for the people. And then, to shorten the story, some of the people, they died that day at the sea. And so after that, what I did was is I actually did some research on boating. I don't know if you know this, but a long time ago in New England, there were some societies actually called rescue societies that popped up. They were quite popular. And what happened was these like adventurous men and women went out and they would join them because they themselves were once rescued as sailors or boaters. And what do? They'd go out in the Atlantic Ocean, they'd rescue boats. People were in trouble, they'd bring them back to dry land. And that was a matter of course for them. Folks did this. And the people felt burdened for them, and so they kept doing it. Well, after these rescue attempts, what would happen was they would come back together as a rescue outfit, and they would themselves recover. They'd share meals. They'd share stories. And yet, because they knew what it was like to be rescued, they'd get back in the boat, and they'd go back out. And then they'd come back, and they'd share some more meals, some more stories, some more drinks. And what took place over time was is these rescue societies got tired of rescuing. They love the meals, they love the camaraderie, they love the bonding, but they began, are you ready for this? They began yacht clubs, okay? What began today as the modern American yacht club, in many cases started in New England, they emerged out of rescue societies. It began from groups of people who were into rescuing people. And after a while they said, you know what? Let's just chill. Let's enjoy the meals. Let's enjoy the drinks. Let's enjoy all this and just relax. And what you read about those stories is that after a while, a few of them, a lot of them didn't leave the comforts of the yacht club, but eventually over time, a new group of them, usually people who were rescued, they would get the burden again. They'd leave the comfort of the yacht club and they would go out again and rescue people and save people. And they would do this all the while their friends were eating and drinking and fellowshipping, they'd go. And what's important, I think, for all of us on this podcast, me first included, we just need to understand something. The church is not a yacht club. The church is not a place where we sit in lounge chairs, sip our drinks, eat good food, and forget all the people out there who are perishing. The church is a rescue society. It's a rescue culture. And so, Jeff, you asked me the question, where does the one come from? Okay, so I'm from Luke 15. And this is a passage that, I mean, Emily knows by heart. You know it by heart. Anybody listening to this who's in church, you know the passage by heart, okay? It says there in that passage that tax collectors and other notorious sinners often came to Jesus to listen to him teach. That's what I'm reading, straight from the scriptures. Now, parenthetically, I'm wondering how many of you who are listening right now, how many of you are like Jesus, and how many of you right now have or will have these sorts of people coming to hear you teach? Notorious sinners, okay, and tax collectors. Let me tell you, be forewarned, if you have them come, you're going to be in a lot of trouble with all the religious church-going people in your church. Just letting you know that right now, okay? And so you just need to know that, because it's no different. And then so Jesus, he made up this story for the Pharisees and the teachers of religious law. They were complaining that he was associating with the sinners and even eating with them. Can you believe it? So here's what he said. He told them a story. If a man has 100 sheep and one of them gets lost, what will he do? Won't he leave the 99 others in the wilderness and go search for the one that's lost until he finds it? In other words, Jesus left the yacht club and all the comforts, and he went back in the boat for the one person who was perishing. That's where the concept of the one comes from.
I love it. I love your story. And I've seen that story and the way it's hitting straight to the heart of church planters as well, Tim, because I think, unfortunately, a lot of us who've been in ministry for a lot of time are real familiar with the yacht club and are real familiar with places and houses of worship that feel really comfy and cozy. And being a rescue society seems really risky and is not something that we're comfortable with or even familiar with. So talk to me about what that looks like when that story hits straight to the heart. And I understand I've been a part of a yacht club, but I'm called to start a new church and I want it to be a rescue society. So how does this passion for the one start at the individual basis as becoming a personal mission for church planters?
Emily, that is like the best question, other than Jeff's question, to find the one that you could actually ask. And here's why. Because if you go back to Jesus' story in Luke 15, and we all know the story so well. I mean, it's like we could almost, you know, I've heard so many people just say 99-1, 99-1. Well, one of the main principles of Jesus is this. The concept of the one must become personal before it comes organizational. I mean, if you just look at the story, if a man, and I would insert in there woman, has 100 sheep, it's man singular. What will he do? What will she do? Won't he leave the 99 and go out in the wilderness, search for the one who's lost until he finds it? It's a critical story for every church leader, every church planter, every pastor to understand. And what I'm very passionate about is evangelism that's made its way into our churches as a program. Which is really at the heart of it all, going after the one. It's got to be a personal conviction and passion that is born out of the reality that I too, Emily Diaz, Jeff Reed, you too have been rescued. So pastors teach on tithing, right? And this is like a pastor teaches on tithing and does not give. Is basically saying, do as I do, not as I say, right? Why do we give? Because God needs our money? No freaking way. God doesn't need our money, okay? We give out an abundantly grateful heart that Jesus, he gave it all. And for me to return a portion back is the least I could to display my thankfulness and gratitude. Tithing ought to be a personal conviction and passion for a Christian long before it's an organizational reality, because your church needs the money, right? And so churches become generous because the person or persons at the helm are generous. They give lavishly and generously. So the one has to be a personal, passionate conviction for every rescued person. They realize it. They go for it. So when I see a pastor, and I've seen some, and nonprofit organizations who ask me to give their money, one of the first questions, you've heard me say this, Emily, one of the first questions I'll ask is, show me your giving records. Because if you're not willing to do that, I'm not going to do what you're not doing. How dare you? And so the same thing I'd say to a pastor who begins a, evangelism program in a church, or focuses their church so that the church would relate to the one, but they themselves don't relate to another person who's far from God. That's like, how dare you? I mean, because have you lost sight of who you are and what God has done through his son, Jesus Christ, for you?
So for the church planter that hears your challenge and takes it really seriously and says, you're right, Tim, how dare I? How dare I implement this in my church if I'm not living it personally? But then stands at a loss saying, but shamefully, I don't know how to go from here. What would you say? How does the church planter take steps towards living life with the one?
Well, the thing I really appreciate about Stadia, and Jeff, you've seen this, Emily, you've seen this, I think anybody that's affiliated with Stadia knows this, is we are very Bible focused and oriented and centric. And so you'll hear me a lot today. If you ask me questions, go right back to the Bible. And Colossians 4, 3-6. Again, who's he writing to? The church at Colossae. It's a church. It's not a building. Okay. It's not a digital place. It's not a physical place. It's people who are gathered. And this is what he says. If it's okay, I want to read it. I pray for us too, that God may open a door for our message so that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ, for which I'm in chains. So he's in prison. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly as I should. And then he says to them, that's you, Emily, me, Tim, you, Jeff. He says to us, be wise in the way you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversations always be full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you'd know how to answer everyone. So what I would say to a planter, I would say to a planter's launch team, I would say to a pastor in any established church, first step, first principle, he says to us is be wise. And God seems to say to us as church, Christ-following people, be wise in the way you act toward those outside the realm of faith. Why? Well, it seems as if God is indicating people far from God, they watch our lives, and the spirit and the attitudes of those who are calling themselves Christ followers, and you know as well as I do, that's either going to repel them or it's going to draw them. And none of us, I think, that have understood that we have been rescued ourselves, none of us want to repel people who are the ones. But then principle number two, what I think is, again, Paul just affirms what Jesus does, and he says, get personal. Why do I say that? He says, let your conversation. Now, I don't know about you, but when you understand the concept of the time and conversation, it's very different for how we see it in our day and age. Conversations take place in personal relationships. We've become a chatting culture these days. Jeff, I don't want to demean all of us because we all love digital. I've got an iPhone, an iPad, a MacBook that I'm watching this on now. My wife's got them all. I mean, in this COVID-19 season that this is being taped, we've got 17 different devices on routers. Okay, so, but anyway, we've become a chatting culture these days. It's like we're no longer a conversational culture, and conversation happens between people who are interpersonally connected and there's invested relationships. Chatting happens simply between acquaintances. Now, let me say there's nothing wrong with chatting because it can lead to a conversation. But often what I see these days for people who say they want to reach the one, what I think happens so often these days for pastors and planters, church leaders, we're good at chatting. We hear a message on evangelism and we go, oh, I'll talk to the barista about Jesus. Come to my church. Is there any relationship? No. Is there any desire to have a relationship? In all reality, no. But I did the chat. It was a quick, superficial engagement. But it's just a chat. It didn't lead anywhere. And I think sometimes it doesn't lead to conversations because did you see that in Colossians where it says, always be full of grace? So our lead card in all conversations, face-to-face, text, Zoom, you know, social media, must be saturated in grace and kindness and understanding. And then the last thing, Emily, to your question, like, how do I go about this process? I think you have to understand that once in a while, as you have these relationships with the ones, there's going to be times where you're going to need to take a stand. But that's number three. That's not number one. Because he says, let your conversations be seasoned with salt. So it's the third in the progression. And I personally, I kind of resonate. This is just me personally. I don't know him, so I'm name dropping, not because I know the person, but Tim Keller. He says that, and I agree with it, that we're going to need to take a stand. We ought to be, you know, like sold out for racial justice. We ought to be superly charged and concerned over the poor, pro-life, and also Christians should believe, Christians, that sex should only be between a man and a woman in marriage. Now, I know I just dropped bombs, but I'm just telling you that, but that's after invested conversations and interpersonal interactions. That's after wisdom. That might come to play. I hope that's, but that's how I gone about it. That's how I try to go about it. And, you know, here's the last thing I'll say on that is, as a paid Christian professional, I'll admit it is hard, because one of the greatest tragedies of Christianity that unfolds in most of our lives is that we become more and more insulated around a Christian subculture and a Christian bubble. And so most of us, let's just be honest. If you're listening today, you just be honest. Do you have this relationship? Because the greatest gift you can give to another human being is an introduction to the God who loves them. And I don't know about you, but I want to be the kind of person someday who says, hey, thanks for not giving up on me. Thanks for coming after me. Thanks for getting in the boat and seeking to be about rescuing me. But it's hard. I mean, having said all I said, I just identify with everybody. It's hard. I struggle with it even more now with Stadia than I did as a lead pastor of a local church.
Yeah, there's a lot of controversialness in there. And I even want to back up even before the three. You only have 17 network devices in your house. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised at that. Maybe it's the kids that I've got, but I'm probably in the 40s or 50s. So,
You're the digital expert. You're like the digital Superman. I mean, come on.
Evidently, and it all goes down because the ISP wigs out. So, like, I feel, but no, seriously, there's some really rich ideas in there. Let's follow up on it. Maybe it's controversial, maybe it's not. But why go after your one instead of going after everyone? Like, I am not a 30-year lead pastor, and so, like, teach me in this. Help me understand. I look at, you know, verses like 1 Corinthians 9, I think it's 22. I become all things to all people, you know, Paul's talking about. So by all means possible, I might save some. You know, and I've had pastors tell me that we need to be doing everything and getting out there and trying to reach everyone. And that really kind of challenges even some of my own ideas of an individual relationships and building off of that. And so I feel that tension. Others out there feel that tension. Help us understand here how to balance that. How should we handle this situation?
Well, I think you have to, again, just let's remember this is personal before it's organizational. So that's critical, right? And when Paul's writing that, who's he writing? To the Corinthian church. So he's writing it to people like you, Jeff, like you, Emily, like me, Tim, right? And if you go through the whole context of the passage, he says, when I was with the Jews, I lived like a Jew to bring the Jews to Jesus Christ. And then, you know, he says, when I was with those who follow the Jewish law, I too lived under the law, even though I'm not subject to the law. I did that so I could bring those people to Christ. When I'm with Gentiles, another people group, okay, who they don't follow Jewish law, I lived apart from the law so I could bring them to Christ. And then he goes on, when I was with those who are weak, I shared their weaknesses, for I want to bring the weak to Christ. So then your part that you quoted, Jeff, a lot of people take that out of context. Yes, I try to find common ground with everyone, doing everything I can to save some. So then what everybody says is, in a church context, but remember, we're not dealing with organization reality yet. But a church is comprised of a bunch of different individual ones. Jeff is a one unit. You know, Jeff's got a wife. Jeff's got kids. They each get one. Emily, you know, Abiel, Tim, Sue. So he lists out specific groups. Three, Jewish folks, Gentile folks, and weak folks. He was trying to find common ground. Paul was a unique dude. He was a multifaceted, multi-talented, multi-relational guy, okay? And I think what he's saying is this. He's got some things. He was a Jew of all Jews, he tells us in the scriptures, right? God redirected him to the Gentiles, and he was weak. He had his own pain in his side, you know? So he's saying, okay, I have some things that put me around some ones who could, in reality, be my one. And I think we'd all have to agree on this podcast, like just in the three of us here, we've all got our something. For you, Jeff, it might be digital. I also know that you happen to enjoy the martial arts. So for you, it could be the martial arts could be your something, okay? Emily, your something, I know because of Ciudad de Gracia, it you got grafted into a Hispanic culture, okay? That's one of your some things. What's another something that I don't know about Emily that we all need to know?
I'm a hiker.
Okay, there you're a hiker. And God bless hikers, okay?
In other words, it's not your something, huh, Tim?
No, it's not my something, man.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? I go out to the desert in Palm Springs area, and there's all these people have maps of hikes to do out there. And then you'll go see whole groups doing the hike. And I go, oh, you know, go for it. I'm going to stay on my motorcycle while I watch you all go up into the hills. But my something happens to be working out in motorcycles, okay? And so, you know, the cool part to me about this, Jeff, and the question you ask is, we each have our something. And Paul was saying, we get to choose. Because of that something is going to put us around some ones, will we choose to place ourselves with the one of Jesus's terminology so that you can bring that one to Jesus Christ? So if you bring your ones, I bring my ones, Emily brings her ones, that's everyone. I mean, from a contextual standpoint, okay? I'm going to just bear a little bit of my soul right now. For some of you, my one, I already said, it's like motorcycles. For years, I've had people say, you need to join a Christian motorcycle club. Okay, I'm going to tell you right now, before Jeff gets emails about this, there's nothing wrong with that. Those are great. They do great things. But I just want to say, gag me, okay? Because the way I see it, because of my personal and passionate conviction that I have been rescued, I'm going to leverage my one something, which happens to be one of those is motorcycle riding, to be with someone who is the one. Just like I mentioned sailboating a little bit earlier, our sailboat race team, it's comprised of people who are what we would categorize as the one. There's 6 to 8 people on the crew. There's only 2 of us, maybe 3 on the crew that would be people who have already crossed that line of faith and said yes to Jesus, because they were rescued them themselves. So I'm going to do everything I can in the spirit of God to put my life around people who do something that I like to do, be around them, and then see me be used to save some, not through my power, but through the Holy Spirit's power working through me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. And you've made it clear, Tim, and just obviously in your passion and what you've said, that it starts with a personal conviction. It starts with that leader, not only having that personal conviction, but leading that out and living in that way, living in whatever their one thing is with ones, engaging in life with them. And then the hope is, right, as church leaders, as church planters, that culture that is convicted within one person spreads to the organization. It spreads to the church that they are starting. So when we start to see churches transform from being those yacht club societies, mm-hmm. to actual rescue societies, what are some of the benefits and what are some of the challenges that that can create within those churches?
Do you really want to know? Okay, that's the question. I mean, because the benefits are many, but the first benefit is, and I love this, you develop real Christ-like maturity in those people because now they're on the mission of Jesus Christ. Luke 19:10. Again, I'm going to just keep sticking with the Bible, okay? The Son of Man, Jesus, came to seek and save that which is lost. In other words, Jesus came on a search and rescue mission to those who are lost, to those who are drowning. He left the 99, go for the one. And in that case, in that story, in Luke 19, Zacchaeus was a wee little man. A wee little man was he? Remember that guy? Okay, you got to ask yourself, church planter, church pastor, do you have a marina mentality? Because Emily asked about that. If an entire church is focused on the one, the idea of consumerism leaves. Because the phrase you hear in every church is feed me, feed me, feed me. I was in a mentoring group with a guy who I dearly love from a church nearby. And one day in the mentoring group, he just said, this is our first question. Okay, what's the number one reason people leave your church? He first looked at this one guy who I think is like the best Bible teacher in the whole United States. And the guy goes, well, the reason people leave my church is because they're not being fed. And then he went to the next guy, and that's what he said. The next guy, that's what he said. The next guy, that's what he said. And so what happens is when everybody's on point in mission, and when you're on mission, Jesus's mission, you actually mature, because babies and teenagers think only and always about their freaking selves. Adults think about others. Others. So that's a benefit. Is that okay to say it that way?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I mean, I just, because your church actually gets more mature. You know, you think it's, and then the second benefit is, and this is what I love about the Crossing that I got to be a part of, your church will always be a safe place to hear the dangerous and scandalous message of Jesus. Because if everyone is inviting, you know, based on their something to someone who's a one, to let's say a weekend gathering or to a small group or to an outreach event, to a digital event, okay? If everyone's inviting their one, the entire game has changed. Because everyone's showing up and they're always thinking about, what is this going to look like through the eyes of the person who's sitting next to me on my shoulder? What does this think about to the person who's going with this to this food serving event in our community? When the questions are asked in a small group, because the marina mentality leaves, what happens is we now ask questions in groups differently, because now we realize not everybody even knows the Bible.
Let's talk about this, because what you're talking about in Stadia, who I love, is active in teaching this ideology of the one to a church planter, where it's you're starting with the seed that's growing out, and you're establishing that DNA with the planter, who then plants the church with this, the one mindset. You know, a lot of the audience of the Church Digital are existing churches, physical digital church online, but they're existing established churches, to use your word earlier. Mm-hmm. How difficult is it converting a church, an existing established church, to this, the one mentality?
How difficult, Jeff, is it converting a church that's fully analog and physical to a digital reality? Over the past 3 to 4 months, when this podcast is being aired, every church has experienced a lot of tension, a lot of turmoil, a lot of consternation, even wondering how many people are still a part of their church, really even watching their church, engaging with the content that's being produced by their church, okay? So, I mean, anytime you introduce the new order of things, it becomes problematic for something that's already established. So I will say this, okay? It's much easier to start a church with this focus. But please hear me, if you haven't heard it already through this podcast, it's got to be personal in the life of you, the planter. And I'll just say, we've always heard the phrase, it's easier to have a baby that, you know, than it is to raise the dead, okay? Because if you're going to convert a church to the one mentality, you need to understand some change theory and change management. This is one of those initiatives. I'll be frank, it could kill a church. There's tons of tension in this. There's just lots of tension in this. But here's the good part if you try this, okay? Once you get passionate about this, whenever you carry out the life and the way of Jesus, it always is gonna hurt for those who call themselves church-going people. So you're like Jesus. Woo! I mean, like, we're following Jesus. That's a good thing, right? The famous story in Mark 2, those four friends cut a hole in the roof so the paralyzed guy could come down. What happened right after that happened? Well, it tells us real quickly that, you know, they get involved. There's something was about physically challenged people. Let's put it in the context. There's something was physically challenged people. They were around a someone, was a one who needed what Jesus had to offer. So they take him there. And now what happens? The religious church-going people, they got all up in arms with Jesus over that very thing. And I'll tell you, one of the things that you just need to know is, if you're willing to offend church-going people, then go for it. And that's what those people did. The story of Zacchaeus. I love the story of Zacchaeus. Why? Well, the mission of Jesus is in there, Luke 19:10. But you know what? No one saw Jesus in the trees. And there are religious people. But Jesus got saved that day. And instead of people posting it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, no. What did they do? All the people in Luke 19:7, it says, all the people saw this sinful guy get saved. And they began to mutter and complain and gripe because Jesus has gone to be the guest of a sinner. So you want to tell me, you want me to say, okay, you want to do this in your church? You're going to have to just get ready for some gossiping, some grumbling, some griping, some whining and complaining. But that's common whenever God is moving in the heart of someone who senses that they were rescued from the depths of despair and hell. They were rescued by a Savior, Jesus. And then they, because of that rescue, personally keep going back in the boat, back in the boat, back in the boat, never staying in the yacht club because they never forgot what it was like to be lost.
It would seem to me, having a church focusing on the ones, and the church of ones kind of becomes monotonous. We're reaching the same people. And I don't know that that's a good thing. I don't know that that's a bad thing. Even looking at types of people, spiritual giftings, race, even in this world that we're in now, how does a church that's focusing on the ones not become overly monotonous in context of the one?
Yeah, and the reality is that's been the tension. I think realistically in the United States, these are, since the transition of the, I'm going to call it just in simple terms, the contemporary church, where shifts started taking place. And I will say it this way, Jeff, you will never drift toward the front half of the Great Commission. A church easily drifts to the second half of the Great Commission. Front half of the Great Commission is go and make disciples. Go make disciples. We hear the word disciples, so we think fully orbed, fully mature, no longer baby feeding, milk drinking Christians. So no, but disciple is just nothing more than a learner. It's just the beginning steps. Go make disciples. What then? Teaching them, baptizing in the name of the Holy Spirit, right? Father, Son, Holy Spirit. And then teach them to obey everything I've commanded you. That's the back half of the Great Commission. Well, the way I would say it is this. Does it become monotonous to be 99.9% of the churches that are just floating in the cesspool of the back half of the Great Commission instead of wholeheartedly and passionately with a white hot fervor toward the front half of the Great Commission? Another way to say it would be like this, Jeff, does being a digital evangelist? Because that's what you are, Jeff. Does being a digital evangelist, will that ever get monotonous? Yes or no?
I'll say yes. At some point it will.
When do you think it will?
When culture shifts away from digital being the method.
And how long do you think that'll be?
It's going to be a while.
Yeah. So you got a good run, probably at least as long as you're still on this earth. And the unique part about digital, it's just a form that's based in a function. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, right? Chair is a form that is a function to sit. A digital is an expression as a form that needs a function, right? And so the reality is, you're right, it'll end. But the reality is, Jesus is never ending. He's the Alpha and the Omega. And when someone or someone's truly stay passionate about the fact that they were rescued, I mean, truly, that never changes. That never ends. And we at Stadia, we say until every child has a church. That's our focus. And what do we have a church for? So people can be in a marina, in a yacht club, drinking, you know, fellowshipping, eating? No. We have a church, according to Jesus, to seek and save those who are lost. Do we want those people to grow up and become like Jesus in all ways? Those little ones, as they age, yes. But as they age and become like Jesus, what are they going to do? They're going to go back out in their streets, in their communities, in their cities, in their countries, in their neighborhoods, and they're going to go back and they're going to tell people who are the one, who are a shepherd from the 99, and they're going to say, I'm here for you. And I want you to know about somebody that changed me, transformed me, altogether altered me. And I've never been the same. And I want that for you too.
Yeah, well said, well said. And what I love about all of this is, whether it's physical, whether it's digital, whether it's all that's the means to the end, which is making disciples, having the front end of the Great Commission being challenged before our people. And that's really where we as a church, whether physical, whether digital, whether online, any of those contexts, that's the end game, is that making disciple piece. I was kind of pulling Tim's chain a little bit. We were actually in a meeting, and we were just recently talking about how digital's not the end method. There's going to be something beyond digital, and whether we should brag about the physical aspects of yesterday or the digital aspects of today or tomorrow, all that's meaningless in context of the end game isn't the tech. It's not the fad. It's actually this, the idea of making disciples who can turn, go and make disciples. And that's what I love in context of this one. It keeps us focused with that outsider, with that one lost sheep at heart. So, hey, Tim, man, I want to thank you for the time. Hey, Emily, as we're wrapping up here, landing the plane on the podcast, any closing thoughts?
I'm grateful, Tim, for your perspective and your passion for the one. And I'm really hopeful for the Big C Church, that if we have this emblazoned passion for the one, that we'll see real, true, authentic growth from people coming from being lost to being found and coming into the fold of Jesus.
I'd love to see that too.
Well said there as well. Tim, closing thoughts from you as we're wrapping up.
I'll just keep beating the drum. I won't stop. It's personal before it's organizational. And Pastor Planter, don't you dare cast a compelling vision for what you yourself are not willing to do. You and me need to be engaged with people who are the one. And then that flows out, it radiates, it is so compelling, it is so life-altering. It'll change you, and it'll change your church.
Yeah, amen. You know, we often talk about the value in reaching people today is not within the building. And I would even take a step further. I don't think it's within a church online broadcast or even a social media tweet at this point. I think that the value of changing an individual is in a relationship. And so whether that's in the physical or the virtual space, I told a group of pastors just recently, it was like, you don't have the power of the church anymore. It doesn't matter what you say. It matters far more about what others are saying about you and mobilizing our people, not as attenders or even as members, but, and another church told me, it's activators in ministry, and activating them and releasing them out to reach their circle of influence. We're going to be talking a lot. We've talked a lot about this in the past. We're going to be talking more about this. And Tim opening up here with the one is really just kind of the prelude for more conversations about effective ways for us as a church to reach people, to have this evangelism, to have this outward facing really ministry model in place. That may challenge a little bit about what we learn on the, what we get from an established church. But really, if we're trying to start a movement, if we're trying to look at multiplication and get people beyond just an attender and activating them so that they're an army unleashed on the people they know, man, it's a lot more effective when you're focusing on the one and when you've got individuals who are focusing on their respective one. So, Tim, man, thank you for this podcast. I really appreciate the time. For Emily, for Tim, this is Jeff at The Church Digital. Thanks for jumping on today, and we'll see you next time here at the show. You all have a good day.